So thank you all so much for that. And so I'll really get into the conversation of youth engagement, because I really don't want us to lose sight of not tokenizing young people, but really involving young people in the entire process from beginning to end. And so how can we ensure that young people are meaningfully engaged in the process of formulating the programs, implementing the programs specifically related to their own health? And this can be for anyone on the panel.
Okay. Actually, I had a lot of experience like giving speeches, and it was like nothing compared to what I had while doing this international technical guidance of comprehensive sexuality education for out of school. Because a month ago, I had an interview with Andrea, who is currently writing this guidance, and she is working in UNFPA, right? So she was asking different groups of people, LGBTQ+, HIV positive one, young people who sell sex, young people injecting drugs. And she was asking really specific good questions so young people can answer and can relate them. And I think that was the best way to ensure that our opinion was heard, just because when you're giving a speech, you are rather like a Hollywood star, and everyone is like watching you and saying, whoa, that is so sweet, she's so young and she's saying something. But when your opinion and your thoughts, they are influencing like real documents that then will influence your education, that is a real sin.
Absolutely.
So funny you should ask, Preston. We just had a really good meeting yesterday, sort of with a group of us at Pathfinder, to talk about this issue of meaningful youth engagement at the upcoming ICFP, FP 2020, and a group of young people have come up with a statement on meaningful youth engagement, which they will be launching at the Youth Lounge, which Pathfinder is sponsoring at ICFP. And so it feels like it's really opportune for us as an organization, given our long history and working in adolescent programming, to really start to be more intentional about how we engage youth. And sort of our conversation was a bit free-flowing and free-ranging, but we talked about the fact that we probably haven't done a very good job as an organization. And oftentimes it's because sort of youth engagement activities are linked to projects. And so, you know, we'll engage youth in the design of a project, and then the funding ends, and we're like, thanks very much for your input. And you know, and I've seen this happen over the years, where we engage young people, we solicit their input, we ask them to tell us what they need and that they want, and we rev them up, and they're excited, and then we're like, thanks so much for your input, now we're going to go implement our project, you know. And so there isn't this kind of conduit or this system of ensuring that we bring youth into the conversation on a regular basis. In part, it's challenging because young adolescence and youth is a dynamic period of life. If we engage young people, we can't necessarily expect that they're going to be with us for the next 5 years, because they're in school, they're working, they're getting married, what have you. It's a dynamic period of life, and we can't necessarily expect a 5-year commitment, but maybe a 2-year commitment is reasonable. So we have to, I think, put aside resources, whether it's financial, whether it's human, whatever, to really pay attention to good youth engagement. Like I said, we were talking a little bit about, you know, trying to create youth advisory boards or councils or groups, maybe not youth advisory groups, but because that sounds sort of passive and, you know, sort of asking them to rubber stamp what we're doing. But these kind of fellowships or councils or something where we consult with them periodically and just make sure that we're kind of on the right track and that we're sort of responding to the needs of young people. And also seeing this not as a one-way street of us soliciting information from them, but as an opportunity for them to develop skills, to develop networks, to develop to gain access to things that they wouldn't normally gain access to. Mm-hmm. Two things I think are really important around youth engagement. One is, I think we have to do training of adults that run organizations to be receptive to the voice of young people. I think there's oftentimes this kind of like, thanks so much for your input. A little patronizing, you know, and a lot of times as adults are kind of like, well, I don't know what to do with this. You know, and then the other thing is, I think we also have to help young people find a voice that is sort of, that adults can also respond to. There has to be this kind of sense of partnership that we kind of have to meet each other in the middle. And I think we've seen a lot of young people that are passionate, that they're they're activists. They want change and they want it now, which in some respects older adults might find a little sort of threatening. So how do we also help young people to develop sort of more of an advocate advocate's way of speaking? You know, taking some of that activism and passion and channeling it into some of this more discourse that may be a little bit more comfortable for adults who are still going to be in charge of resources and programming decisions. So I think it's something that we have to tackle. Mm-hmm. I think it's been, I think we saw this in 1994 at ICPD. You know, there was a huge cadre of young people that attended the conference. We have not done a very good job of it. So I kind of throw it out as to all of you as a challenge to be continuing to think about how we really can meaningfully and not just meaningfully, but engage with young people as partners in what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, hard to add something else what been already mentioned by Lada, by Kate, and Senator already started to speak about youth engagement and participation. Just maybe one thing. When we are talking about youth participation, we should think about the diversity of young people. So young people, it's not just one homogeneous group. So there are a lot of populations and subpopulations. And in the HIV world, when we develop HIV prevention or HIV treatment programs, more or less UN and partners follow this rule about engagement of young people from key populations. If we are talking about many other programs in the field of sexual reproductive health and rights, I think it's still a huge problem. Even inside UN, sometimes I hear from my colleagues, oh, we can bring young people who use drugs, so young people selling sex, and to put them on the one table with people from the government. No, this is not possible. Yeah, this is possible. So because we have to remember about the diversity and not only key populations, indigenous young people. Indigenous young people in developed countries, they're totally left behind, but we have to include them in our 2030 agenda, and we should remember about them. Because unfortunately, governments from developed countries can easily give funds and support young people in other regions of the world, but often they forget about these populations in their own countries. Disabled young people with disabilities, whom we already mentioned. In terms of sexuality education, we should remember that young people with disabilities, they have a right for pleasure with sexuality as any other young person. So we should bring them on the table and involve them not only in discussion, but in the development and implementation of our programs. So, yeah.
Thank you. And I believe that Sarah or Senator Edwards, did you have a follow-up?
You go ahead.
Okay, so I just wanted to touch on an experience that I had back in 2009 when Trinidad and Tobago hosted the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting. I was fortunate enough to be a part of the Youth Forum there. And I remember coming out of that experience very excited, supercharged to go out there and be involved in youth work and youth development and looking for the next opportunity. And I remember coming out of there and looking around, and there were no opportunities for young people in a substantive way. And that was more or less a spirit crusher, because there you are. Your expectations have been heightened. You have been encouraged to go out and do all of this great work. But where are the institutions? Where are the support mechanisms? Where are the opportunities? And far too often, I see young people get exposed to opportunities and be told that they can do anything that they put their minds to. But when they actually attempt to go out there and do things, you look at the environment and it's not conducive to youth development in a substantive way. And I think that is one of the major issues that young people face, because we are always told that you should be doing this and you should be doing better and X, Y, and Z. But where are the support mechanisms? So I know for a fact that under the Commonwealth, there is the Youth Mainstreaming Guide, which is one document that can be used to help with mainstreaming youth into the various arms of the state. So be it at the level of the government, whether it be at the level of lower level institutions. But the fact is that we need to mainstream young people into the decision-making process, where it's not a matter of let's bring a young person into the room as an afterthought, but it should be highlighted or written there that a young person has to be a part of this discussion or has to be contributing in a significant way. I also see national youth councils as playing a very important role, because you have a lot of countries who do not have the mechanism in place for a national youth council, and they tend to suffer, the young people that is. So by having institutions, and I know St. Lucia, coming from the Caribbean, I can speak to St. Lucia as having a national youth council incorporated through an act of parliament. So a government can come, a government can go, but the national youth council remains and has an active role in contributing to discussions and issues surrounding young people. Also, with respect to funding, as was highlighted, we do need to have funding mechanisms. But for far too long, when it comes to young people, the main funding streams that they get would be for things such as sports, arts and culture. And when we want to get into opportunities where young persons can go to forums around the world, where all leadership or capacity building exercises, you tend to be told by corporate entities and even the state that, well, this does not fall within the criteria of our normal sponsorship or our normal funding. And that is a spirit crusher as well, because you know that you're going out there to do good work. You know that you're leaving your country to be exposed to other opportunities or learning opportunities to come back and spread that knowledge and that information. But because it's not one of those things that are attractive as sports, so arts and culture, you're not going to get the funding. So we need to, on a national level, on a global level, revise the kinds of activities that we fund, because as was mentioned as well, it seems as though we're willing to fund events, but we need to fund institutions that are set up to empower young people. We need to fund programs that have a long-term effect. And yes, young persons are afflicted by that level of expectancy that many older generations may not understand, but it's because we're in a digitally connected world where we're seeing things happening in other spaces. And then you question yourself, why isn't this happening here? Because you know it is possible. You know, with someone just having the political will, it can happen. So that's why you're seeing young people going into spaces and agitating and ramping up, because it's not that they have an unreal expectation. It's just simply that the expectation is not being met with the resources that can be dispatched in a reasonable timeline.